I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and this is Up to Date. If you're still looking for that perfect gift, it may not be too late. Sure, you could go out and buy some clothing, jewelry, or, men don't do this, a blender, but why not pick out something meaningful for your friend or loved one, something that matches their personal taste? Here's an idea, the gift of movies. Today, DVD gurus Mitch Bryan and Jason Heck give each other some gifts of film and spring a few surprise gifts on me. This is one of those shows where I'll be flying by the seat of my pants, but that can be a lot of fun. Are you looking for a good movie match? Contact us during this hour with details about your gift recipient's taste, and we'll do our best to match you up with the right film. It's Up to Date, following this hour's news. Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. You know the power of Christmas is extra potent when Mitch and Jason start handing out gifts. Our DVD gurus are in the house to hand out movies to each other, and I'm told, maybe even to me. And yes, I qualify because I've been such a good host this year. So the duo who brings you their favorite horror movies and war movies and spy movies are now in the studio bearing gifts. What's in store? I don't know, but we're about to find out. The DVD gurus are screenwriter and UMKC film prof Mitch Bryan. Mitch, happy holidays to you.
How you doing, Steve?
Nice to have you. And Jason Heck, film critic for Inc. magazine at the Kansas City Star. And happy holidays to you too, Oz.
Beware geeks bearing gifts.
Yeah, so I'm just so excited. What's going to happen here today? All kinds of good things.
Yeah, we're going to give each other presents. We're going to give little clues because no one knows what gift is coming their way. So first, we're going to give the recipient a chance to guess what that gift is with three clues, at which point they can, you know, take their best shot. And then we will unwrap the gifts and we will talk about the movies and we'll play some clips. And
yeah. We're going into the fifth dimension on this one. This is color radio. Yeah. It's going to be amazing. This is history being made.
And if our listeners are looking for a good movie to give as a gift this holiday season, call us. Describe the person you want to give your film to, and our gurus will tick off some ideas for you based on the description you offer for the person you want to give a gift to.
Mitch and I can prescribe any number of films for any number of ailments or character types. For example, let me give you an example. Mitch, I have a nephew who's 6 years old and wets his bed. What would you recommend?
Navy SEALs.
Navy SEALs. Chuck Farr, Charlie Sheen, Michael Biehn, 1990. Terrific.
Lots of water.
Great. Thank you. Good choice.
Our number, if you want to call to partake of the guru's great wisdom here, 816-235-2888. Our email address, uptodate@kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page. So, Mitch, you were saying before the show that you've been coming across all these sort of odd movie choices that are becoming Christmas traditions in a lot of households around the area. What are you talking about?
Well, how many times can you watch A Christmas Story, really? As much as we love seeing that kid get that tongue stuck to that frozen pole, how many times? So it seems like people are choosing unconventional Christmas movies that have Christmas in them. So I heard from somebody who said they were going to watch Gremlins and Die Hard as their Christmas movies, but both
Gremlins
of which take place during Christmas. What are there some other...
Die Hard, I don't remember. Die Hard takes place during Christmas?
Yeah. Yes, it does. At the Christmas party at Nakatomi Towers. You remember? It features the great Christmas song, Christmas in Hollis by Run DMC. And of course, Now I Have a Machine Gun, Ho, Ho, Ho. Or if you want to read that in Alan Rickman's voice, you're probably welcome to. But no, Die Hard is actually a Christmas movie that guys can get into. I have sort of defaulted a little bit to Christmas Vacation with the Griswolds as sort of
Chevy Chase's
last good movie, but B, A Christmas Story for all the charm it has. And I certainly love Darren McGavin. I can't do it anymore.
What happened to Chevy Chase?
The Chevy Chase show in 1993 didn't help. That was, 3 weeks, and it pretty much finished him off. But, yeah, he's got a new start again in, what is it?
Community.
Community. He's kind of starting over again. But, yeah, the 90s are, I think, a period where Chevy Chase would certainly like to forget. Mm. For me, I'm also watching Christmas in Connecticut with Barbara Stanwyck and Sydney Greenstreet, a movie I love. I think it's very charming.
Yeah. You're a big Lethal Weapon fan. That's sort of a
if you like Lethal Weapon, Christmas movie. Got a guy getting shot through the chest and right through a carton of eggnog. So you got that too in Lethal Weapon. So if you hate eggnog but love Christmas, that's your movie. Gremlins is certainly an unconventional Christmas movie. And then they're kind of Home for the Holidays. Jodie Foster, I think, did that with Holly Hunter. Jodie Foster directed that. There are some sort of smaller movies, nothing like The Holidays, which was kind of a Latino take on it a couple years ago. You have to look because, you know, most stores are going to put Christmas Story and Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, even though that's a Thanksgiving movie, and Christmas Vacation right up front and center, along with Charlie Brown Christmas, which honestly is the only Christmas movie I know that actually takes the time to address Jesus Christ, which is what Christmas is really about. And you have Linus lecturing the kids on what Christmas is really about. So I think that one's actually still pretty worthwhile and still worth watching. But in terms of traditional movies, I get pretty wrung out.
Well, and then there's the Andy Griffith Show's Christmas Story episode from 1962 or 3, which is a classic. And it sort of addresses...
Right. Otis gets drunk, dresses as Santa. Barty drops his gun, shoots him in the leg. And Otis just sort of toddles into the hospital. Yeah. And Aunt Bee's chicken fixes everything.
But we watch every year. We watch the Christmas episode.
That's not really what happens, is it?
No, it's not. No,
that's not what happens.
In fact, can you give me a little taste of the narrative thrust of that episode?
Otis actually dies. The chicken doesn't fix anything.
It does not. It's a happy little story. What did Christmas used to be back in the day? Mitch, you've been sort of researching some of these heavier topics.
Yeah, in a way, these unconventional, ultra-violent anti-Christmas choices kind of fit because Christmas has only been a national holiday since 1870. And
I did not know this.
Prior to that, the Puritans hated Christmas because they recognized everything, but they recognized its pagan roots. But there was a point, I guess, where Christmas was much closer to this weird combination of Halloween and New Year's in the sense that it was this big, crazy party, and these wassailers would go out singing, and if you didn't give them food, drink, and sometimes even money, they would smash your windows and they would break your door down. And it was this big, turned into this big, these big street brawls. And so apparently what happened was that everyone recognized this as a problem, and two very disparate groups, the very conservative Knickerbockers and the very liberal abolitionists, got together and could agree on one thing, which is we've got to clean up Christmas. And they've got to turn it into some kind of a family holiday for the kids where everybody stays indoors and nobody goes out and raises Cain.
Right.
So it coincided with the cartoon, the famous poem, the Night Before Christmas, and the famous illustration of Santa Claus as this giver of gifts to kids who are knowing who's naughty and nice, and it was all turned into this sort of family consuming holiday too. It's good for business, right? This is a way that everybody has to go out and buy gifts for members of their family so they can spend money and then stay inside their homes. So that is how this sort of Christmas became what we think of as today, but it did not always be that way. And certainly if you go to England, it's much more of a big party in England, and people wear the little crowns, the Christmas crowns.
Well, what a great little audio essay here on Up to Date on this last show before Christmas. Jason, can you match it?
Say that one interesting thing I know about the history of Santa is that our modern conception of Santa is drawn by and large from 1880s advertising for the Coca-Cola Company.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. You know Father
either.
Christmas and all there are all sorts of sort of European interpretations.
Wasn't Christmas at the manger, though, back in Bethlehem?
Yeah, but the manger had a Coca-Cola freestyle machine with over 100 flavors.
Yes. It's free lodging at the manger, too, so nobody made any money on that, so that's not good.
Okay.
Very un-American.
Doesn't last.
Yeah, and little baby Jesus wore Nikes as well, so that's something. That's something. But no, I can't match Mitch's knowledge of Christmas. I'm not quite the Christmas, nerd. Mitch is. But I will say that it's my second favorite holiday after Halloween. I enjoy the presents, but I enjoy candy and scary things more, and Mitch knows that. We watched some scary movies at Mitch's house in October, but we don't get together and watch Christmas movies. Yeah. If we did, it would probably be Die Hard and Lethal Weapon, though.
Yeah. Or Black Christmas with Santa Claus as an axe murderer.
Or Black Christmas or Santa's Sleigh Ride, S-L-A-Y,
nice.
Silent Night, Deadly Night. There are all sorts of Christmas as absolutely horrible holiday movies out there.
Well, again, if our listeners want to call us this morning at 816 416-235-2888 and describe a friend they want to give a movie to, and they can describe some characteristics about the friend, and our gurus will then sort of latch onto some good ideas for actual film titles that might help guide you on your way as you do your shopping. Again, 816-235-2888, our email address, update@kcur.org. Tweet us @kcurupdate. Well, I guess it's time for some, like, gifts, right?
I think I get to open a present now. I think Mitch has one for me.
This is Mitch. Brian's going to give Jason Heck a gift. Yeah.
And I'm going to give you a movie. I'm going to see if you can guess what is in that.
Sure.
Well, with three clues, all right?
Okay. Well, I unwrap it. All right.
You got to wait till you get the clues, and then I'll let you give your permission. All right. So here's the first clue. First clue is the RAF.
Battle of Britain.
Second clue, you can wait. Because second clue is World War II.
Uh-huh.
Third clue is Zira.
RAF, World War II.
God, you stumped this man. I mean, he doesn't deserve a movie. He prides himself on getting this stuff right.
Is it the Dam Busters?
No, it's not. No, the Zira clue, I was hoping this. Who played Zira?
Kim
Hunter.
Kim Hunter.
Right. So this is a movie that stars Kim Hunter and David Niven. It was made in 1946, and it's an... Open your present.
Open it up. Yeah.
A Matter of Life and Death?
Yeah.
I've never heard of this.
Oh, you are in for a treat, Jason.
Tell us about A Matter of Life and Death. What is this?
A Matter of Life and Death was made by the team of Michael Powell and Emmerich Pressburger, who are arguably two of the greatest English filmmakers.
Life and Death of Colonel Blimp.
That's right. And they made Black Narcissus and The Red Shoes.
Sure.
And this is one of the greatest love stories ever made. And
you've never heard of this film, Jason Heck?
I've heard of it vaguely, but as part of the Powell and Pressburger canon. But
I didn't think there was a film you didn't know everything about.
Hey, shut up, will you?
Okay.
How you doing?
You're letting me down.
Mitch, why are you giving me this movie?
Because it marked David Niven's return to the cinema.
After his wartime service.
It's notable for many reasons, one of which is that it's a film that it's about an RAF pilot who crashes, his Lancaster bomber is about to go down, he bails out without a parachute to certain death, but the folks in heaven make a mistake, they missed it, they didn't see him when he hit the water in the fog, and he manages to live, he manages to wash ashore and fall in love with Kim Hunter, at which point they come down and say, there's been a mistake, you need to go back to heaven, and he says, not a chance, I'm in love now, you guys made the mistake. You've got to rectify the situation. And ultimately, it comes to a trial in heaven where this guy has got to make his case for whether he or not, you know, he gets to stay on Earth. Now, what makes it really interesting is that at the same time, once he gets back to Earth, and all the Earth scenes are shot in gorgeous Technicolor and all the heaven scenes are shot in black and white, when he's on Earth, he starts talking about this situation that he's in, and everybody thinks he's crazy. And we start wondering, well, maybe he is crazy. Maybe this is all just a hallucination on the part of this guy. And so his sanity is in question. So it's very much a movie in the tradition of Heaven Can Wait.
Here comes Mr. Jordan. Yeah.
Which is, I thought, another reason you might like this.
I do love Heaven Can Wait, and I do love Here Comes Mr. Jordan. Well, and I love Lancaster Bombers.
Exactly.
Powered by four Merlin engines.
The amount of sentiment that went into this particular gift choice is almost making me teary here. What a wonderful thing.
Well, if you could suck it up to the duration of the show, that would be great. Because if you bust out, if it's Hello Niagara again. Yeah. I mean, that happened. We talked about The Natural. That happened. We talked about Field of Dreams.
I love those films.
You lose it every time.
I love those films.
I'm going to watch this one immediately. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
This looks like a great gift.
Yeah, a very good gift, yeah. Well, we have a clip from this film?
We do. We have a clip here. This is at the very beginning of the picture when he's about to crash. He's radioed in, and the woman who picks up the microphone on the other end is Kim Hunter. Mm-hmm. And they fall in love over the radio, talking to each other in the moment before he's about to die. It is spectacular.
Does she have her ape makeup on?
No, she does not.
Okay, that explains how they can.
And this is from the film
A Matter of Life and Death.
Okay.
No one can help. Only you. Let me do this in my own way. I want to be alone with you, June. Where were you born?
Boston.
Mass?
Yes.
That's a place to be born. History was made there. Are you in love with anybody? No, don't answer that.
I could love a man like you, Peter.
I love you, June. Your life, and I'm leaving you. Where do you live? On the station?
No, in a big country house about 5 miles from here. Lee Woodhouse.
Old house?
Yes, very old.
Good, I'll be a ghost and come and see you. You're not frightened of ghosts, are you? It'd be awful if you were.
I'm not frightened.
What time will you be home?
Well, I'm on duty till 6. I have breakfast in the mess, and then I have to cycle half an hour. I often go along the sands. This is such nonsense.
No, it's not. It's the best sense I ever heard. I was lucky to get you, June. Can't be helped about the parachute. I'll have my wings soon anyway, big white ones. I hope they haven't got all mud, and I'd hate to have a prop instead of wings. What do you think the next world's like? I got my own ideas.
Peter.
I think it starts where this one leaves off, or where this one could leave off if we'd listened to Plato and Aristotle and Jesus. With all our little earthly problems solved, but with greater ones worth the solving. I'll know soon enough anyway. I'm signing off now, June. Goodbye. Goodbye, June.
My goodness. Woo.
That's how it starts out. It's so great. Everybody, go watch A Matter of Life and Death. It will make your life better.
Come to my house to watch it, guys.
Okay, well, lots of people calling in to get sort of tap the wisdom of Jason and Mitch. Perhaps they have a friend they want to give a film to. They're going to describe the friend and use the knowledge of Jason and Mitch to sort of help them land on a movie or two. Tosin from Kansas City, Kansas. Good morning. Tosin, good morning.
That's right. Hi, Mitch and Jason.
Hi there.
I'm calling for my parents. My parents are, I need to get them a movie, and they're both into positive films, kind of triumphant, victorious films, uppers, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
They're both a bit conservative, but they love movies with twists. They also love intellectual movies, challenging movies. Mm-hmm. I guess that's a lot of criteria, but if it's got a silver lining, I think that's something they really like.
Tosin, that's a good description. That's upper. Pretty good.
I got to tell you, having just talked about A Matter of Life and Death, it's really good, and it's an upper, and it's got twists, and it's imaginative, and it's very smart. That sort of immediately comes to mind, but that's probably because I'm high on this movie.
So I guess if we're thinking an upper, we probably don't want to go with Spartacus, because that doesn't end with an upper.
Does it? No, it doesn't.
Yeah. Twists. Let's see if we like twists, we like smart. So what, like kind of maybe Sherlock Holmes type stuff? Kind of twist?
Sure.
Honestly, I would, if you want a great movie with great twists and classic suspense direction, I would honestly recommend, because I just watched it, Basil Rathbone in The Hound of the Baskervilles. It has these great moments of things like slow zooms on turning doorknobs. It has Holmes do one of his best disguises, and it of course ends in that wonderful 1939 fashion with the villain being suitably, credibly demolished by Holmes. But it's also very funny, and Rathbone is he's an amazing Holmes. So I would go with The Hound of the Baskervilles or The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, which came out, I believe, the year after that, 1940. But they're both great. They're both very smart for 40s movies, which tended not to be in really big on twists or complications. And in terms of good winning, well, you know, good always wins in 1939. Except Hitler in Poland, but we're thinking movies here. We're just thinking movies.
Okay.
But yeah, you know what? I would give him Mitch's recommendation, Matter of Life and Death, because that's what I'm going to watch. I'm going to open my present the first thing I do when I get home and watch it. So yeah, give him a try.
Awesome. Thank you.
Good luck, Tosin.
See you, Tosin.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Sam in Kansas City, Missouri writes this: my girlfriend loves movies with a sci-fi twist where nothing is as it seems. Some of her favorite movies are Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, Being John Malkovich, The Usual Suspects, and The Majestic. I have a hard time finding movies that she likes.
Ha!
Can you recommend one?
12 Monkeys. 12 Monkeys.
Seriously.
Directed by Terry Gilliam. No lie. It is a really, really, really cool movie where what is or is not real is shifted around in the protagonist's heads, and we get some unreliable narration there too. I love 12 Monkeys,
and I would say 12 Monkeys. I would also say Solaris, the remake with George Clooney, great science fiction.
One of my faves.
Lots of
that's
know,
a great
twists.
Thing. You talked things about are, that.
Yeah, things aren't what
Mitch,
it seems.
Mitch and I love Solaris.
Yeah,
George Clooney continuing to take chances as he gets older, and not rely on being so. So damned handsome, and it has one of the one of my favorite scenes with George Clooney ever, when he awakens on his first night in the space station. It's actually really an amazing performance.
Okay. Well, next up, Jason Heck is going to give Mitch Bryan a gift, and Jason, give some clues here.
All right. Cold War. a surplus World War II submarine, the world's greatest detective, a pompous, waddling villain played by Burgess Meredith.
Oh, oh. I think that may be through it. Is it Batman?
Open it up and find out. It is indeed the 1966 version of Batman.
I saw this at a drive-in when I was a little kid, and I remember when they got the shark repellent out because there was a shark on Batman's leg, and they were hanging from the Batcopter, and they used the shark repellent.
The shark repellent bat spray.
This is going to be a little trip down memory lane.
This was great. Producer William Dozier, who had brought Batman to the small screen and completely reinvented it as camp, and right in the spirit of mid-60s, decided he wanted to have a big-budget, big-screen film to promote it. 20th Century Fox said, no. You can do it if the show's successful. So the show was, in fact, extremely successful its first season.
I love that show.
This movie was made for $1.3 million in between the first and second seasons, got a modest theatrical release, and did very well. We have an amazing combination of four villains. We have the Catwoman, the Joker, the Penguin, and the Riddler. All of them
in
played.
One film, if you can believe it.
The sum of the angles of that rectangle is too terrifying to contemplate, as Commissioner Gordon says. We do have Lee Merriweather as the Catwoman. Julie Newmar was unavailable. She was making McKenna's Gold at the time.
Mistake. Career
Big
mistake.
Big mistake. It was nobody filled out the cat suit like Julie Newmar. Their plot is simplicity itself. They will steal an experimental dehydrator from Commodore Schmidlap of Big Ben Distilleries, and they will then dehydrate the nine members of the UN Security Council and hold them to ransom in test tubes for the world to pay ransom. It is up to Batman and Robin, Adam West and Burt Ward as his youthful ward, to foil the plot. It takes digs at LBJ. It takes digs at the Cold War. It takes digs at the Pentagon. It is a very, very, very clever screenplay by Lorenzo Semple, who writes some incredibly clever one-liners. Once again, the beauty of Batman is it works on two levels. You know, kids are going to go crazy over, you know, the batarangs and the ropes. But, you know, parents will love it when, you know, they're climbing up a building and there's a party and Robin says, gosh, I wish we could stop. And Batman says, you know, we're not social climbers. You know, it's very, very clever. There are some great set pieces. The terrific tricky buoy, which is Batman goes and they find a hologram projecting buoy, which is then magnetized. They're trapped, held there by their utility belts. The Penguin submarine fires several torpedoes. Batman reverses the polarity on his bat communicator and detonates two of them. But confound it, the batteries are dead on the third one. However, a heroic porpoise throws itself in front of the torpedo and saves them. It was noble, as Batman said.
Wow. What's the clip we got here?
Well, what we've got here is Batman and Robin are trying to find out where exactly the submarine has come from. And they call the Pentagon to find out, and Batman is disappointed at U.S. procurement security, to say the least.
Hello. Batman speaking.
Oh, hello.
Who is it?
Batman.
Oh, Batman.
Hello, Batman. Ahoy. What can I do for you?
Hello, Admiral. A routine question. Have you recently sold any war surplus submarines, and if so, to whom?
Well, just a moment. I'll have to look that up. Keep practicing. Answer affirmative, Batman. We disposed of a war surplus submarine last Friday. A pre-atomic model. To some chap named P.N. Gwynn.
P.N. Gwynn?
The Penguin.
Did this P.N. Gwynn leave an address?
No.
Just a post office box number. Would you like it?
No, thank you, Admiral. You've been very helpful.
Abaston belay, Batman. Your tone sounds rather grim. We haven't done anything foolish, have we?
Disposing of pre-atomic submarines to persons who don't even leave their full addresses.
Good day, Admiral.
Why did that show take off like it did? You had to watch it.
It was the zeitgeist. It was lurid colors. It was Dutch angles. It was Adam West as wooden as could be.
Yes.
completely reversing the gimmick and making Batman one of the most enjoyable and funny characters. He was the ultimate straight man, ultimate deadpan. He kind of invented it before Leslie Nielsen did, and it still holds up remarkably well.
Yeah.
Thank you very much,
Merry
Jason.
Christmas, buddy.
Yes. Thank you so much.
We received a phone call from a listener who pointed out that A Matter of Life and Death is also better known by its title, Stairway to Heaven.
Stairway to Heaven was the original.
I've heard of it.
Oh,
yeah.
You have not.
Oh, wait, I'm thinking of the song.
Right.
Yeah,
that was the American release title of it. But it was.
Okay. Well, let's grab a couple phone calls here. Folks want to recommend some good Christmas films. Jason from Olathe. Jason, good morning. You there, Jason? John from Gladstone. John, good morning.
Good morning. Yes. One movie that I really enjoy is The Long Kiss Goodnight. It has a Christmas twist to it. Mm. Gina Davis, Samuel L. Jackson.
Lots of nods.
It's one of those terrorist flicks.
Written by the great Shane Black, who Mitch and I are extremely fond of.
And he seems to write everything at Christmas. Kiss, Kiss, Bang, Bang. Yes.
Lethal Weapon. Holy catch, you're right.
Yeah, he loves using Christmas as this kind of, you know, the sad time, the time when people are depressed and bad things happen.
Good thinking.
John, thank you. Happy holidays. Thank you. Yeah. We received this tweet at KCUR Up to Date. My favorite Christmas movie is The Lion in Winter from 68 with Peter O'Toole and Katharine Hepburn. How could it not be? Another tweet, get blasted on Nog, watch Die Hard and Jingle All the Way back to back. Drink when you get upset with Willis and Arnie, is what he says.
Blasted on Nog. Yeah, Mitch and I, to call us devotees of The Lion in Winter would be dramatically understating it. We're huge, huge, huge fans.
Yeah. Let's take a break. When we come back, the gift giving will continue here on Up to Date with Jason Heck and Mitch Bryan. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. That music is from Citizen Kane. Yeah, okay. If you find you need those tips for parenting teens and college-age kids through the holiday break from yesterday's show, you can find it online at kcur.org. We're off on Monday, but join us on Tuesday for an encore broadcast of our conversation with physicist Michio Kaku and his vision of life in the year 2100. But this hour, we're talking with our DVD gurus, Mitch Bryan and Jason Heck, and you can go to their Facebook page and like what they do, and you can download every broadcast they've ever done here on KCUR.
Broadcast.
All on the DVD gurus
Facebook page,
right?
Yes,
sir. Okay. Again, Mitch Bryan, a screenwriter and UMKC film prof, and Jason Heck, a film critic for Inc. magazine at the Kansas City Star. And we're giving gifts to each other here today, gifts of movies, and we're also taking your phone calls at 816-235-2888. If you need some help picking out a movie, you don't know exactly what to give to someone, you can describe the person you want to give it to. Mitch and Jason will wind up and help you land on a good movie or two that might fit the description just perfectly here. So 816-235-2888, our email address, updatedate@kcur.org, or tweet us at @kcurupdate. So next up here is Mitch?
I have a present for
present
you.
For me?
For Juan? You.
Yeah. You're going to Jason, I think, here. You're going back to
Jason.
We're doing him.
Oh, okay.
We're going to
That's right.
We're saving the best for last.
Okay, we're saving the best. Sorry.
The best for last. The Return to Mayberry movie from 1986.
Okay, if you already know it, then what's the point?
Well, it better be that. Or
okay, I didn't get anything off your dumb Amazon list.
If it's
These
not
are surprises.
That, I don't want it.
These are handmade, like when I whittled you a PlayStation last year.
So it's my turn to give a present to Jason.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I have three clues
Ooh,
for you.
It's kind of heavy.
Yeah. Well, it seems heavy, but
it's
not really.
Movie.
Okay, here are my clues.
Uh-huh.
Clue number one is Laurie Partridge, an NFL linebacker, and plastic surgery.
Thing with two heads.
No.
Oh, Rosie Greer in the...
But Laurie Partridge isn't
there.
Who's Laurie Partridge?
Give the clues again.
Laurie Partridge.
NFL linebacker.
An NFL linebacker and plastic surgery.
When I think NFL and linebacker and plastic surgery, I think either the thing with two heads or Webster.
Mm. What do you think when you think Lori Partridge?
Lori Partridge. Partridge Family.
Right.
Like the Partridge Family? Yeah. Susan Day?
Susan Day, right. Susan Day, plastic surgery, doesn't do anything for you?
Look her!
Open it up and see.
Is it Looker?
You're absolutely Looker. Right. It's Looker.
Looker.
Took me a minute.
What's Looker?
Looker is one of my guilty pleasures. Yeah. From 1981.
God, there are so many.
I'm glad you gave this to me. I haven't seen this in like 6 or 7 years. I've been looking for it.
It's just as amazing as it was when it came out. Just as entertaining. Just as much fun. It was made in 1981. It was written and directed by Michael Crichton, the author of Jurassic Park and the man who made Westworld, the guy who was always able to look forward into the future. And this movie, in its mere sort of 90-some minutes, manages to deal with plastic surgery, robotics, computer imaging, TV commercials, mind control, time-space perception, and it featured the first 100% computer-rendered human being form. This was before Tron, actually. Just
My
before Tron.
Goodness.
And it's incredibly entertaining. Albert Finney, the great Albert Finney, plays with a very deft, light touch, a Beverly Hills plastic surgeon whose patients, these beautiful, beautiful women, are coming to him and asking him to perform minute plastic surgery adjustments on what seem to be already absolutely perfect faces
Wow.
and figures. And then they start to die after they've had this procedure.
Mm-hmm.
So it's up to Albert Finney and Susan Day, one of these models that he's worked on who is still alive, to ferret out the mystery, which leads them to the great James Coburn as the head of a very sinister corporation that's up to no good.
And who was the NFL linebacker?
The NFL linebacker was a guy named Tim Rossovich, who I guess played for the Eagles and I think maybe played for San Diego too. And he's a henchman who takes with him this thing called the Looker Gun, which I have to actually look up what this acronym stands for because it's way too complicated. Light Ocular Oriented Kinetic Emotive Response Gun. And he shoots you in the face with it, and you lose all sense of time and space, and it freezes you, and then he's able to go in and do nefarious things in your apartment.
What's the clip we got here?
So clip here is Albert Finney at dinner with James Coburn finding out what James Coburn's corporation is up to.
From Looker.
From Looker.
What exactly does Reston Industries do?
We're a $6 billion conglomerate, 37 countries around the world. We're diversified into fast foods, leisure wear, pharmaceuticals. We do high technology, perceptual devices, military head-up displays, pinball machines, television commercials. But I understand you have something to do with commercials, too.
Who, me?
Well, yes, it was on the news tonight, something about girls who died after having plastic surgery. It was a police report.
Ah, well, it was just a routine inquiry. I didn't realize my name would be mentioned.
Well, I hope it doesn't cause you any trouble.
What was the inquiry about, Dr. Roberts?
It's all a coincidence, really. I did surgery on several girls a few months back, commercial actresses, and there've been some suicides.
How awful.
Well, unstable young actresses. I try to make some fast money in commercials. Find it tougher than they thought, that's all.
Well, the police can't think that you had anything to do with it.
Oh, no, it's nothing like that.
Well, that's good. We couldn't get involved in anything awkward.
No, actually, the girls are all linked with some company called Digital Matrix.
Digital Matrix? Well, that sounds rather sinister, doesn't it, Jennifer? See, Jennifer runs Digital Matrix.
We should do a book chronicling the cinematic career of Susan Day.
Okay.
What a
I'll
great
handle
career that was.
The first and the last chapter, which will be the same one.
Yeah.
I was going to say. Again, Mitch and Jason are our guests. We're talking about taking your questions about recommendations for good films to give to a loved one this holiday season. AV from Lawrence, good morning.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a question about a film for my boyfriend. He's a rugged outdoorsman, but at the same time, he loves going to the art museum and drinking a good glass of wine. So it's hard to pick for him.
I would suggest The Edge.
I was going to say the same thing.
Wow.
That's hilarious.
Smart guys.
And The Edge is what, Jason?
The Edge is an amazing movie with Alec Baldwin and Anthony Hopkins, and it's written did Mamet also direct?
Yeah.
It's
Lee Tomahori directed it, but David Mamet wrote it.
It's if you got an outdoorsman in your family and you like smart movies, this is one to do. I don't want to ruin anything, but suffice to say, machismo at a corporate level and a rugged level, and it's really great.
And a great big grizzly bear.
It's from 1997. AV, a billionaire and two other men are stranded, unequipped, by a plane crash in a dangerous wilderness. How many will survive to be rescued?
That's true. It's really good.
Sounds great.
Thank you. Thanks, AV.
Happy holidays.
Bye.
And if you want our gurus to make a recommendation, 816-235-2888, our email address, update@kcur.org. Javon from Kearney, good morning. Javon, good morning. You there? Javon's not there. Okay. Let's see. Up next, Jason Heck is going to bestow a gift upon Mitch Bryant.
A faceless assassin.
Okay.
Fred Zinnemann.
Uh-huh.
France is the prize.
You know, is it the Day of the Jackal?
Open it up and find out, buddy.
Man. It is. I've never seen this movie.
I know. That's why I've
never seen the Day of the Jackal.
How could Mitch Bryant not have seen the Day of the Jackal?
I don't know how I keep missing it. I want to watch it, though. Now I can.
It's a great film.
It's an extraordinarily good film. It's from one of our favorite authors, Frederick Forsyth, who of course did The Dogs of War, which was a how-to on how to launch a coup d'etat with mercenaries in a small country. This is, in fact, a how-to on how to assassinate a political leader. We have the OAS, an organization, a very far right-wing organization of ex-French soldiers, contracting a very debonair, faceless Englishman played by Edward Fox to assassinate Charles de Gaulle, the president of France. Mm. It is a fascinating movie because we are rooting for the killer. He is so smart in his preparations, and he is so thorough, and he is cold-blooded but elegant and charismatic. And the detective who's chasing him, played by Michael Lonsdale, who later did a turn as a Bond villain, is kind of bumbling and kind of clumsy. And we see them. He's always about one step behind the Jackal, and the Jackal is very smart and has all these great contingency plans. A couple of fascinating things about the filming of the movie. The actor they hired to play Charles de Gaulle, the movie filmed in 73, de Gaulle had died in 71. The French government extended all sorts of cooperation to the filmmakers. The movie was shot all over Europe, and this great scene has Charles de Gaulle emerging from his limousine at this liberation day. He's going to pin medals on veterans. Well, when the actor who played de Gaulle got out of the car, one of the elderly extras thought it was the real thing and fainted because the guy looked so much like Charles de Gaulle. And numerous people at the parade tried to help stop the, quote, assassin because they were filming amongst this real crowd. And it was actually a really kind of chaotic, amazing scene, but it's absolutely fantastic, and we root for this killer because he's so cool. He's got all his plans. He knows how to spray paint his car on the fly, and he makes the most amazing gun you've ever seen, and he's got 11 billion passports, and he steals them, and he uses false names to get them, and it's great. But the detective chasing him is remorseless, and he has to do it, but he has to do it in secret. De Gaulle has said no publicity. I don't want anybody to know that there's an attempt on my life. The dignity of France can't stand it. So this detective has to chase him in secret with all the resources of metropolitan France at his disposal. But it's an amazingly great
I can't
movie.
Wait. Thank you yes. so much,
and
Jason.
The clip
Thank
is...
You. Our clip here is the Minister of the Interior has called together this meeting of all the department heads of France to say there's a plot to get the president. We don't know who it is. All we know is that there is a plot. We know nothing about how to do it. And he is asking his Commissioner of National Police what to do.
From Day of the Jackal.
Commissioner Berthier. Any suggestions?
Well, we're in trouble on this one. Our agents inside the OAS can't pin him down since not even the OAS know who he is. Action Service can't destroy him. They don't know who to destroy. Territorial surveillance can't pick him up at the border because they don't know what he looks like. The gendarmes, all 48,000 of them, can't pursue him. They don't know who to pursue. And the police can't arrest him. How can we? We don't know who to arrest. Without a name, all other proposals are meaningless. The first task, then, is to find it. With a name, we get a passport and a face. With a face, we get an arrest. But to find his name, and to do it in secret, is a job of pure detective work.
Commissioner, who is the best detective on the force?
The best detective on the force is my own deputy commissioner, Claude Lebel.
From Day of the Jackal.
So
you know, I just can't believe, Mitch, you haven't seen it. Do you keep a list of, are there other films you're like, you've just got to get to at some point and just haven't for some reason?
Yeah, but I'm not telling you what they are because I don't want to be ashamed.
Hey, no shame. I didn't see Casablanca until I was 30.
Really?
You know,
Nor did I for that matter.
It just, yeah. Kind of, I mean, I dated a girl who at 31 had never seen Psycho, and I had the immense joy of watching Psycho with a girl who had no idea what was coming, and the whole time that... Well, our exciting conclusion is happening. I'm staring at her to watch her reaction, and it was a thrill.
Really?
It was really great.
And she really emoted pretty well.
And the movie, despite being made 40 years ago, worked like a charm on her.
Well, is there...
Try 50 years ago.
Oh, God, it is 2011, isn't yeah. it?
Is there a film like you know you've got to go see, and you just haven't gone to see it yet for
I have actually never seen in its entirety The Magnificent Ambersons, and which is regarded as, had it not been... chopped up by the studio, likely a better film than Citizen Kane. And I've never seen it in its entirety. I've
How
seen
about you, Mitch? Is it one you name?
Well, I think Day of the Jackal is a pretty egregious sin. Yeah. So I need
to
take care
of it. For a film professor at UMKC, of all things.
I need to take care of that.
Okay, if you have someone you want to give a gift of a film to and can call us and describe that person, our gurus will come up with all kinds of good ideas for you. 816-235-2888, our email address, UpToDate@kcur.org. Deanne from Shawnee, good morning.
Hi.
Hi.
Well, I have a son who loves humor, and he loves movies where there's some improv, where the actors are allowed to just take off.
Mm.
What would you recommend?
Well, Will Ferrell, you name it.
I would actually suggest any of the Christopher Guest movies, because those are essentially assembled in improvisational form by the entire cast of each film. I would not recommend for your consideration, which was dreadful. But for me, I would say my favorite is Best in Show. I think everything kind of came together with all these neurotic dog owners. And but, you know, Waiting for Guffman is unbelievable. And Mighty Wind is great. You know, that has music that was written by Michael McKean that they all perform for real. But I would say Best in Show because that is everybody is sort of given ideas about scenes, kind of guide like note cards with what your character's supposed to be like. And then they kind of turn them loose to assemble these movies on the fly.
Uh-huh.
So I would say Best in Show.
And Deanne, I'd agree with that. That's a great pick.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Great. Thanks a lot.
Merry Christmas. Holidays to you, Deanne.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Justin Parlett, one of our computer experts here, tweeted us 12 Monkeys and the original Solaris, now on at Criterion Blue, our perfect gifts. Don't forget the best Christmas movies ever made, Gremlins.
That's right.
Again, great unconventional Christmas movie.
True. Yeah. Okay.
Okay, do I get to give you a present?
Some host has a present coming now.
I can't. About time.
Right,
I had to sit here and wait the whole hour as you guys got
You haven't
happy
given us
I'm
anything, so
here.
Just take it easy.
Here,
just
here,
chill.
Here are your clues. Get ready.
Yes, I'm ready.
Number one. Mayberry.
Return of Mayberry, 1986.
No. Number two, Mass Media.
Man.
And number three.
I'm going to be terrible at this.
Mike Wallace. You don't know.
I have like no idea.
All right, so open your present.
But so Mayberry's the first clue?
Mayberry's the first clue.
So someone from Mayberry is Don Knotts. Mike Wallace.
Maybe.
Okay. Here we go. Opening this up.
From 1957.
A Face in the Crowd. That's a great pick.
You've never seen
that whole film. Andy Griffith starred in it.
Andy Griffith, that's right.
Right before he began the Mayberry series, and I've heard so much about this film.
Yeah,
Thank you very much.
It's right up there with Network as one of the most prescient views of what the future held for mass media, advertising, commercialism. Andy Griffith... in a turn that is sort of terrifying because he plays such an amoral sort of anti-hero, plays a guy called Larry Lonesome Rhodes, who is this ne'er-do-well discovered by Patricia Neal. He's sort of this drunk hillbilly. She finds him in this Northeast Arkansas jail when she's doing her Face in the Crowd profiles of the everyman. And this guy gets onto the radio and is so electric and so seductive and so interesting that before you know it, he's on a TV show in Memphis where he mocks his own sponsors. And they threaten to fire him. And as soon as they fire him, people get up in arms and they throw the product, they burn the product from the from the particular person who was there for sponsoring him, and they realize this guy has the ear of the public and he can do anything, to the point where after Memphis he goes to New York, becomes a huge TV star in New York, begins to hobnob with politicians and begins to become kind of a political kingmaker, and all with this sort of homespun hee-haw, just the ordinary fella talking to the public, until he gets involved with a 17-year-old drum majorette, and things start to go south because he's not quite the man that his public thinks he
is. I've always wanted to see this so much. So funny you picked this. And the clip we have here is what?
So at one point, he's taken into a company that has manufactured these pills called Vitajex, which are basically a combination of sugar and aspirin. They do nothing. But he goes in and tells them he can figure out a way to sell this, and it sounds to me like it's a precursor to Viagra.
Okay.
So here we go.
From Facing the Crowd.
Yeah, I got an idea. Let's make them yellow. Yellow's the color of sunshine and energy. Gives a fella that get up and go, it sets him up solid with the ladies. You get the idea? Like this, if you want to be bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, why, just gobble up a handful of Vitajex and your battery's charged. Watch. Personality undergoes a startling change. I'm gonna get you, you red-headed bloody you. That's what Vitajex does to me, and I ain't even swallowed them yet. You college geniuses want dignity on your program. Back where I come from, if a fella looks too dignified, we figure he's looking to steal your watch. I'll move your merchandise.
Yeah. We're visiting with our DVD gurus. That's a Face in the Crowd, Andy Griffith. And the really cool thing is you can hear many of those same intonations during the run of The Andy Griffith Show, which began just 3 years later.
And after this role, I can see why he wanted to play a nice guy.
Yeah. he was not a nice guy in this
role. I want to give you my present.
It's time.
It's time.
The time has come.
This one I had to pick carefully, so I'm going to give you some clues. Okay. So get ready to open it.
Okay.
First clue, time travel.
Okay. Andy Griffith Show.
Second clue, a map.
Okay.
Third clue, larcenous dwarves.
Wizard of Oz.
Go ahead and open it up. This is your present.
Time Bandits. I was close.
Time Bandits is one of my favorites. I think it is, along with Brazil, actually one of the very best films that Terry Gilliam has ever done. He actually did it while the Monty Python troupe was still active. He is the second film he did with him, although we don't count Jabberwocky because it was not very good. We have an incredibly he made a movie for kids. It is a family film. It is about a young boy who joins with six time-traveling dwarves who work for the Supreme Being, played by Ralph Richardson. They are spend most of their time designing plants for the Supreme Being, but they find a map. When the Supreme Being created the world, it wasn't perfect. There were holes in time, and they decide to use these holes to leap through time to become stinking rich. So they decide to rob people like Napoleon, played by Ian Holm. Sean Connery plays King Agamemnon. John Cleese plays Robin Hood.
Wow.
And David Warner plays evil in one of the very best juicy performances. He plays evil as a frustrated technocrat who wants to study computers and calculators and VCRs, and he's surrounded by idiots and doesn't understand why God wasted his time making 43 kinds of slugs and parrots. And the movie is absolutely charming. Gilliam shot it from a very low perspective to give you the perspective of a dwarf or a child. Mm-hmm. It's some people call it the second part of his Dreams trilogy, where we have – well, actually, the first part, which is The Dreams of a Child, Brazil, The Dreams of a Middle-Aged Man, and Baron Munchausen, The Dreams of an Old Man. We have a very great clip, actually. This is where they have jumped out of Napoleonic – Italy, and they have all of Napoleon's loot, including the Mona Lisa, and they have jumped into Sherwood Forest and are surrounded by rabid wild men who are, in fact, the Merry Men, and they're about to meet Robin Hood, played by John Cleese.
From Time Bandits.
Hello, I'm Hood.
It's Robin Hood.
Say good morning, you scum.
Good morning. You're all robbers.
Oh, the best, Mr. Hood.
Jolly good. And you're a robber, are you? Jolly good. And do you enjoy robbing, then?
Well, it helps pay the rent, sir.
Ha, 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 jolly good. And you're a robber, too, are you? How long have you been a robber?
4'1".
Good Lord. Jolly good. 4'1"?
Yes.
Well, that is a long time, isn't it? Well, now, I hear you've made a pretty good haul.
Well, see for yourself, sir.
I say, crikey. I mean, I've been in robbing for years, but I've never seen anything like this. Crammed. And you acquired all this by yourself?
Well, it was a good day, Mr. Hood.
Jolly good day.
It's nice, isn't it?
Rather. Well, I mean, what can I say? Thank you. Thank you. Thank you all very, very much indeed.
Oh, don't mean... What?
Well, I mean, it's frightfully kind of you. The poor are going to be absolutely thrilled. Have you met them at all?
Who?
The poor?
The poor?
Oh, you must meet them. I just know you'll like them. Charming people. Of course, they haven't got two pennies to rub together, but then that's because they're poor.
Well, talk about covering a lot of ground. Thank you very much for Time Bandits. Thank you very much for a face in the crowd. And happy holidays to you both.
Happy holidays, buddy.
Happy holidays. That's Mitch Bryan and Jason Heck. You can find their guest suggestions as well as our program schedule and podcast all at kcur.org. We're off on Monday, but join us on Tuesday for an encore presentation of our conversation with Michio Kaku and his vision of life in the year 2100. We had help today from KCUR's Danny Alexander, Maria Carter, and Suzanne Hogan. The show is produced by Steven Steigman. Happy holidays to all and Happy New Year. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date.
This is KCUR 89.3 FM. The NBA season kicks off on Christmas Day, and we'll have a preview tomorrow on Only a Game, Miami versus Dallas, and how to stack cups competitively. That's on Only a Game tomorrow morning at 6. Up to Date is made possible in part by KCPT, Kansas City Public Television, presenting a full day of episodes of Masterpiece Classic, including Cranford, Return to Cranford, and Season 1 of Downton Abbey. That's Sunday beginning at 9. Details are online at kcpt.org. It's just about 12 o'clock, 30 degrees in Midtown Kansas City. This is KCUR-FM, KCUR-HD1, Kansas City Public Media.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creator.